All right, good afternoon, and welcome to this very special event, which is more or less like a authors meet critics session and a book launch. Yes, I think it would be nice to start this event by having the two authors of this book, new book on New Age spirituality, to tell us the motivation and perhaps to introduce the book to us, why they did what they've done. And then we have the conversation. It's my pleasure to invite Steve to just tell us about the new baby. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Afi. Thank you all for coming. It's nice to see you here, and we appreciate your support. And of course, this is as much Ingvild's volume as mine. Of course, it's as much the contributors' volume as ours as editors. Unfortunately, other contributors can't be here because most of them live in far-flung parts. But it's very much a joint effort. I'll say something about the volume first, and then Ingvild will say something about the volume from her perspective as well, and then we'll move on to the critical comments. So, well, the history of the volume, it's sometimes interesting to see where these books come from, and those of you who've edited a volume know the amount of work it takes to put one of these things together. In some ways, edited volumes are seen to be not as serious and as weighty and as valuable as monographs, but those of us who've done these volumes know that they can take a lot of work to get them together. This one began as a two-panel stream at the IAHR Congress in Toronto in 2010, so it's 4 years ago now. I'd heard Ingvild give a paper on angels in Norway at the European Association conference in Brno in the Czech Republic in 2008, and we got talking as a result of that, and later started talking about having a panel for the five-yearly Congress of the International Association for the History of Religions. So we got that together. I was looking for an original call for paper that we sent out for that, but I couldn't find it on my email, actually. But the call for paper and the finished product that we have here were fairly close, and I'll get on to what the major aim of the volume was and how that shows us in just a minute. After the conference, we thought we had a couple of reasonably good panels. We looked for additional contributors, so we thought we'd have this idea of getting a book together. And we deliberately sought non-Anglophone colleagues in the first instance, particularly in northwestern Europe, particularly in the Nordic context, partly out of serendipity in the fact that we had contacts there. But we also wanted to try and displace the axis of studies of New Age away from the slightly transatlantic, particularly American-British axis, and see what else was going on under the titles of New Age and holistic spirituality in another kind of geography. Obviously, we couldn't do a totally international geography, so we expanded the parameters a certain amount. We spread out the circle in the areas that we knew best to try and get some different voices and analyses in. And in the end, actually, as you'll see, all but two of the contributions in the book were written by or concern continental European or Nordic contexts. I'm not sure, actually, that we fully, exploited or got the theoretical yield out of that geographical choice as well as we might have done. We do speculate at one point in the book about the affinity or the alignment between culturally Protestant backgrounds and the display of New Age and holistic phenomena. And then also, as a foil to that, or a counter test to that, we do have one chapter on New Age in a predominantly Catholic context, a chapter on New Age in Poland. And I did try to get a contribution from Ireland. I was in touch with a scholar over there who, in the end, couldn't quite make that, the deadline. But, we didn't really quite bring that out perhaps as much as we might have done. In a sense, that proves the pragmatic point of doing these kinds of volumes. Like one or two other details about the volume, this geographical aspect kind of escaped. It wriggled away as production schedules increased. And for me, as the deadline for the Research Excellence Framework in the UK got closer and closer as well. As those of you, again, know who've been involved in any kind of publishing, the pragmatics of the business are quite considerable. And the best laid analytical schemes can go awry as the clock ticks and ticks away to the deadline. So that's something about the history of the volume. The location of the volume within a field we could call New Age studies, just for the sake of a conversation. The first academic publications on New Age phenomena began around 1984, as some of you will know, perhaps with a heyday of New Age studies occurring between around about 1995 and about 2007. 1995 in particular marked the publication of a book by Michael York called The Emerging Network, A Sociology of the New Age and Neo-Pagan Movements, based on really, as far as I'm aware, the first PhD thesis researched on this new field of religiosity in the UK. So 95 was an important date in New Age studies. 96 was important as well, which saw the publication of two books, Wouter Hanegraaff's book, New Age Religion and Western Culture, Esotericism in the Mirror of Secular Thought, and Paul Hillas's book, The New Age Movement, The Celebration of the Self and the Sacralization of Modernity. The subtitles of both these books suggest there are different methodological commitments. Hanegraaff to the newish field of Western esotericism, as it's called, and based on a history of ideas approach, based in textual analysis, and Paul Hillas to a kind of qualitative philosophical sociology. So 95, 96 sees the beginning of what I'm calling a heyday in these studies. Marking the end of the heyday around 2007 was the publication of Darren Kemp and Jim Lewis's impressive compendium, Handbook of New Age, which some of you will know, and Matthew Wood's incisive critique of the dominant theorization of the subject, or the dominant theorization of the self in New Age studies, especially associated with Paul Hillas's model of self-spirituality. The title of Matthew's book, Power, Possession, and the New Age, Ambiguities of Authority in Neoliberal Societies, sets out quite an ambitious theoretical agenda that everyone working in this area needs to come to grips with in one way or another. So, interesting stuff in a kind of heyday of activities, and in part the reason for the end of the heyday, if you like, is that other titles for this phenomenon enter the field, and similar studies are now being done under rubrics of popular spirituality or holistic spirituality and such like titles that are proliferating themselves. We can talk about that a bit later on. These and other studies from the heyday, then, have some interesting and often quite substantial theoretical angles, but none of them fully discuss the phenomenon in question within the core question or under the core question of the history of religions or religious studies. Namely, what have these phenomena of healing, of angels, of Reiki, of divination, of talk about energy and spirit, what have they got to do with the category religion, particularly as they have been represented as somehow marginal, exotic, or even deviant to proper or normative religion? And this really brings us to the end of what I've got to say just now and to the basic aim of this volume, which was explicitly designed to explore ways in which the phenomena of New Age or holistic or popular spiritualities might have something to say, firstly, about the content and boundaries of the category religion and the effects of the pervasive discourse about proper religion, and secondly, about the persistence of a more wide-ranging, cross-cultural, comparative set of phenomena, which could be said to serve as raw or elementary forms or building blocks of that synthetic compound category religion. So we wanted, in other words, to bring together two fields largely until now kept apart. The studies of New Age, holistic, popular spiritual phenomena on the one hand, often undertaken within sociology or perhaps under the rubric of Western esotericism, and that whole project of theorizing about the category religion comparatively and cross-culturally. We wanted to put the two together and see what the result was. So everybody writing in this book was in some way asked to address this theme. So that's what we were trying to do. That's all I have to say for now. And I'd like to now pass on to my esteemed co-editor, Professor Ingvild Gilhus from the University of Bergen, currently here on an Erasmus teaching exchange as well, so some of you have met her already. And of course, Ingvild is also deputy president of the IAHR.
Vice president
of the IAHR. Right, thanks, Ingvild.
Thank you very much. Very good to be here and nice to see everyone. When I, together with my colleague Lisbeth Mikaelsson, started to study New Age spirituality about 20 years ago, it was seen not as real religion, more like a pseudo-religion, and it was very low in the hierarchy of religions. We got money from the Norwegian Research Council. We cooperated with two colleagues in cultural science, Torun Selberg and Bente Alver, and we had a project called Myth, Magic and Miracle Meet Modernity. It sounds very good in Norwegian. I don't know if it sounds very good in English. Probably a little bit pedestrian, but it was a good Norwegian title. And we wrote books about the re-enchantment of culture, cultural re-enchantment, and we started with courses for students. I feel that the book that we have now edited is far from what we started with in the beginning of the 90s, when this was exotic and a little bit deviant. In the book, we have some of the pioneers from Scandinavia, Olav Hammer, Mikael Rothstein, and Lise Lotte Frisk, among others. I also think I started with ancient Christianity, with Gnostic texts from Nag Hammadi in the History of Religion department. And I think that late antiquity and the contemporary world have several things in common. The uniqueness of the present seems very much to be in the eyes of the beholder. The two periods are connected in at least two ways. One way is, of course, that we live in the latest antiquity, in the way that many of the ideas, narratives, and practices in religion were put together at that time and are still with us. And angels is, of course, one example. But there is another similarity. The Roman Empire had a global situation. They had a dominant culture with Greek or Roman culture. They had a culture where things and thoughts moved fast, and they had some universal concept and a way of making synonymizations of concepts from different places. And if we move back before the 4th century, before Christianity became the dominant religion of the empire, and with universalistic aspirations, we will see much of the same as we witness today, that the basic forms and building blocks of religion were visible. I think we, in a way, have forgotten that because we have had, we are used to having so-called world religions, and because we have been studying religions by means of a world religion paradigm. The point of the departure of New Age spirituality, and with the bold, I think, undertitle, Rethinking Religion, I think that's a very good subtitle. And in it lies perhaps that what we see on the New Age scene today is some sort of normal state of religion. And in line with this, some of the voices in this book raise questions about the religion-spirituality divide. It has been usual to make a division between religion as we know it and what is today always, sometimes called spirituality. We have made a definition, called it, or some sort of determination of it, we're making it into New Age spirituality. But some of the voices in the book raise question about this division. Is it a good division to divide religion and spirituality? Because spirituality then comes through as something very special, and perhaps it is not. Another thing that is questioned in the book, I think, at least if we think a little bit further than we do in this book, is the borders between religion and the secular. We see that many of the New Age practices and techniques, they develop across the religion and the secular divide. So that is perhaps something to pick up and do more about in the future. And then we will be open for the critics, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks to Steve and Ingvild for that very interesting introduction. And we've had about the motivations, the origin, the structure and texture of the book. And there's no doubt that both authors have contributed to the wider debate on New Age spirituality. And I have no doubt in my mind that this is again a major contribution to the discourse. But we are at the same time quite fortunate to have three persons here, you know, who are also very versed in the field. And I would like to say one or two things about first about Marion, Dr. Marion Baumann, is from the Open University, and until very recently was head of department religious studies. And let me mention that she's been president of the British Association for the Study of Religions between 2006 and 2009. She's also been president of the Folklore Society from 2002 to 2005, and her research interest is quite broad. I think, Marion, you were financial secretary or treasurer for BSRO at the time, if I remember.
I was conference organizer.
Okay, yes. Her research interest is quite broad, but also very spot on for this field of research, and this includes vernacular, folk, and popular religion, religion as lived experience, contemporary religion, including New Age, alternative spiritualities, paganism, new religious movements, and I think she's also contributed significantly to the field of methodology in the study of religion, and I can just go on and on. So we are quite delighted to have her here, and we look forward to her, you know, response to this book. Thank you.
Well, it's a really great pleasure to be here and to be part of this event, to really formally, as I see it, launch and applaud this new volume by Steve and Ingrid, New Age Spirituality, Rethinking Religion. I would just have to say that back in 2000, Steve and I worked on another co-edited volume, Beyond New Age, Exploring Alternative Spirituality. And I have to say that back then, I think we would both have been rather surprised, possibly even shocked, that 13 years on, we actually don't appear to have moved beyond New Age at all. New Age seems stubbornly resilient, a term that's immensely problematic, ambiguous, contested, but that we apparently can't do without. It's still much loved by publishers, for example, and it's broadly used as a convenient shorthand. We keep saying we're using this term as a convenient shorthand, but actually we're not entirely sure what it is that it's shorthand for. It still seems to be something that we haven't entirely got to grips with or entirely tamed conceptually. So this new volume, New Age Spirituality, is another assault on the term from a somewhat different angle, and it's a really fascinating collection which is really going to move the field on, I feel. It has demonstrated the delights, as Steve has indicated, of the advantages and challenges sometimes of bringing together a great range of different European contexts and perspectives, as well as these thought-provoking contributions from Japan and Taiwan. And I think that European context is so important. I had the pleasure of teaching in Bergen at the time of the Magic, Myth and Miracle project. And one of the things that I'm so aware of, being very involved in European ethnology, is that elsewhere in Europe, there has been this close symbiotic relationship between departments of folklore and ethnology and religious studies. And to some extent, that has always led to a more on-the-ground feel of what it is that religion means to people. And I think that's something that perhaps Anglophone scholarship has been quite late coming to, but it's a great delight that, for example, studying phenomena that are broadly under this umbrella term New Age has forced or seduced many religious studies scholars into a more fieldwork-based engagement with the topic, and I see that as a great advantage. Now, Steve's talked a wee bit about the introduction, but I think it's very important to say that this is going to be such a valuable introduction for students in the future, because it's a great potted history of the scholarship of the field. And they've set out the field in terms of three waves of New Age studies, which I think is really helpful, if a bit reminiscent of Sellars and Yeatman's Waves of Saints. But I think it is a nice way of seeing it. So this first wave of macro-level analyses of contents and boundaries of the so-called New Age movement, with authors such as Paul Helas and Michael York. And then that second wave, which produced some really fabulous, varied, highly contextualized particular studies of beliefs and practices, which again came under this broad umbrella of New Age, which, as the editors say, produce rich micro-level ethnographies and histories. However, despite producing some really great empirical context-rich studies, the risk that that has been identified by the editors of this second wave is the disconnect with general theories of religion. And it's in response to this risk that the editors have set out to highlight some new avenues of interlinked inquiry to draw out the full theoretical potential of New Age for general studies of religion. And this is what will constitute the third wave of New Age studies and is really very much to be welcomed, because, you know, we can't keep seeing this New Age, whatever that is out there. It's got to be brought into the main field of the study of religion. And it's really good to be reminded of the highly eclectic, indeed sometimes slightly mad and partial evidence bases from which some of the earlier highly influential theories of religion were formed. To be reminded of what many thought they were looking for or hoping to achieve as scholars of religion. And indeed, to highlight the flaws in and problems of fixing terms and models and definitions somewhat arbitrarily at particular points in time and space. So this idea of examining religion per se through the lens of New Age, so that instead of manipulating it to look like religion, for example, construing it as a movement, or rejecting aspects of it, or indeed all of it, as narcissistic, inauthentic, transitory, or whatever, because it doesn't look like religion, is undoubtedly one with a lot of mileage. Ingvild quotes Peter Beyer's remark that New Age tends to look like a duck and quack like a duck, but avoid identification as a duck. And so it is indeed time to redesign the binoculars we're spotting the ducks through, or the taxonomy of what constitutes duckness, or indeed both. Now, inevitably, and forgive me, Stephen Ingvild, I'm going to say something about vernacular religion, but you should have anticipated this. Because in New Age terms, there is a certain spooky synchronicity to this agenda, because just as this volume urges examining religion per se through New Age, I'm involved in this kind of parallel and complementary project of rethinking religion through vernacular religion. But it's part of this bigger context, I think, of bringing certain worldviews, beliefs, practices, ways of being in the world from the margins and actually saying it's all religion. But as soon as you do that, you are, of course, facing the question, but so what do we mean by religion? Now, four decades ago, American folklorist Don Yoder succinctly described folk religion as the totality of all those views and practices of religion that exist among the people apart from and alongside the strictly theological and liturgical forms of the official religion, recognizing this huge and frequently understudied area of religious life that should be taken into account to provide a rounded picture of religion as it's lived. And very much his successor conceptually has been American scholar Leonard Primiano, but who tellingly has a background in both folklore and religious studies. And he's described vernacular religion as an interdisciplinary approach to the study of the religious lives of individuals, with special attention to the process of religious belief, the verbal, behavioural and material expressions of belief, and the ultimate object of belief. And the point here is, and why we're on parallel lines here, is that whereas Yoder and others show that there have been many debates over and conceptualizations of folk religion, Primiano problematizes the category of official religion, rightly stating the obvious, namely, institutional religion is itself conflicted and not monolithic. And again, that is so much what has been demonstrated by a number of the chapters in this volume. So Primiano is saying that any two-tiered model of folk and official religion residualizes the religious lives of believers and at the same time reifies the authenticity of religious institutions as the exemplar of human religiosity. And again, I think we can see this is exactly what has happened again and again when people have looked at New Age and spirituality, and it's somehow been in contradistinction in some authors' minds to proper religion. As Ingvild was saying, it seemed exotic and other when we first started looking at this. So I think it's just worth noting that Primiano claims that vernacular religion's conceptual value lies in the fact that it highlights the power of the individual and communities of individuals to create and recreate their own religion. And again, I think this is very much what we're seeing today. And I have to say, was splendidly demonstrated by a Hungarian scholar, Judit Kishalas, in a book that I co-edited with Ulu Valk on vernacular religion. Judit was researching the practices and narrative autobiography of a Hungarian healer and diviner who uses magical formulae and wax pouring, drawing on very traditional folk healing methodology in that region, but also is employing techniques for conjuring angels and the preparation of amulets, influenced very much by American New Age angel expert Doreen Virtue. Additionally, she's calling on particular saints to work for her in line with vernacular tradition, and her healing activity is at least tacitly acknowledged by the local Catholic priest. So this woman's praxis and self-image are constructed in the context of folk medicine, contemporary spirituality, vernacular Christianity, but the point is, it is probably safe to say that she is not kept awake at night by concerns over category conflicts and definitional difficulties. And it's what we're doing here, and what we're seeing here in this volume, just as we see, I think, with a lot of writing on vernacular religion, is that we're anticipating heterogeneity and individual creativity. And therefore, we're not dismissing or ignoring this sort of activity as methodologically inconvenient, or indeed, as Steve was saying, as deviant. So I think I see this very much as, I see this volume as a tremendously helpful addition to the idea that we are really feeling dissatisfied with religion, but that's a big one to take on. And of course, for me, I have to say that I do see so many areas of common interest, vernacular religion, contemporary spirituality, in my mind, are part of that same bigger phenomenon. In terms of the book's contents, I think, as Steve has said, some chapters in this book fit the third wave remit, perhaps better than others. And inevitably, I guess, I'm most interested in those which come up with models and those which have attempted to factor in, to a greater or lesser extent, so-called folk or vernacular religion. However, the banality of banal religion, a descriptor used by Sig Hjardfard, I must confess, I can't quite handle. I would say, sparing Ingvild's blushes, I found very interesting Ingvild's proposal of a quadripartite, a four-part model of religion, by expanding Jonathan Z. Smith's model of religion in ancient society. He talks about religion here, there, and anywhere. This has been expanded by Ingvild to religion here, there, anywhere, and everywhere. So in her formulation, we have religion here, largely encompassing domestic religiosity, religion there, civil, civic, national, vicarious religion, religion anywhere, characterized by small-scale entrepreneurs, client and audience cults, and religion everywhere, which is mediatized religion. And again, this is one of the elements that we need to be so aware of, because it's such a major transmitter of all sorts of ideas and practices. What we've got here is the model proposed by Norichika Horie, combining fieldwork and analysis based largely in Japan, with some forays in the UK, notably Glastonbury, and the Beltane Fire Festival here in Edinburgh that Steve and I attended with him, as well as some examples from America. And he's proposing these four types of spirituality, new spirituality, and new age. And I just asked Steve to put this up as an example. I think this is really interesting, and I certainly plan to test run this model on students when I'm spending a month teaching at University of Tartu in April and May, and because I think it will prove a very useful tool for stimulating discussion and looking at phenomena through slightly different lenses, which I think is what this is about. I'd just like to comment briefly, again mentioned by Steve, on Dorota Hall's chapter, The Holistic Milieu in Context, between traditional Christianity and folk religiosity, because she's highlighting the importance of context, culture, and vernacular religiosity in relation to the holistic milieu in Poland. And Dorota has consistently here and elsewhere stressed, for example, the miracular sensibility, very much derived from popular Polish Catholicism, and to some extent the conservatism of Polish new spirituality. And her chapter ends with the exhortation to shift our focus from situating the holistic worldview and practices within the tradition of studies on the New Age towards placing them within the ethnographic tradition, which underscores the symbolic dimension of the research phenomena and their local grounding. a woman after my own heart. I think that that idea that we talk about New Age, just we talk about religion or Christianity or whatever, as if it is one thing, whereas we know it turns out so differently in so many different contexts. And again, that's something that this volume, I feel, really brings out very well. And her insights, by the way, I think would slightly call into question, for example, Paul Hilas's characterizations of Estonia as something very close to a tabula rasa as a result of the Soviet era. That Estonian scholar Lea Altnorma reports a noticeable tendency towards church-free spirituality now is in part testament to the strength of vernacular, non-institutional religion, because that was what carried on during the Soviet era. And I can't mention everything, but I find much food, finally, much food for thought in Finnish scholar Terhi Utiainen's chapter, Doing Things with Angels, for all sorts of reasons. I love her rather tart reprimand of Luckman for his unnecessary and patronizing moral assessment of parts of New Age as egotistic and hedonistic. But also, she's very much talking about people finding their own path. And this idea of finding their own path is, of course, what individuals have been doing for centuries, drawing on resources, whether culturally or commercially or virtually provided, to find out what works for them. And this really is nothing new. And this is why we've got to keep spreading the borders and bringing into the fold many practices, ideas, ways of seeing the world that perhaps have been kept out in the cold for too long. So finally, I would just really like to congratulate Steve and Ingvild for bringing together a really useful, thought-provoking, stimulating volume, which is going to be good for a variety of audiences in and beyond academia, and a great textbook for moving the field on. And in that respect, it's great that it's come out from the start in paperback. So congratulations, Steve and Ingvild. Like New Age itself, this book is good to think with. I've been saying for years that the trick is not to keep defining and redefining alternative. It's to realistically define what now counts as mainstream. And I think this volume is part of a movement away from the myth of pure religion to reality testing of religion per se, and as such is a tremendous service to us. So thank you.
I would like to invite the second reviewer quite nicely, Bettina, Dr. Bettina Schmidt from the University of Wales Trinity St. David in Lampeter. And just to say that she is in religious studies, a senior lecturer. She is currently the secretary of the British Association for the Study of Religion. So, if you are on that email list, she's the one responsible for clogging your email. As to her research interest, she's very much also familiar with the field of New Age spirituality, new religious movements, but more specifically, for several years she's worked on African-derived religions in Brazil, but also religions in Latin America, particularly looking at specific religious communities like the Haitian Voodoo, the Cuban Santeria, and the Shango from Trinidad and Tobago. Apart from this, she's very much interested in theoretical issues, and some of her research work has captured issues, themes varying from religion and identity, hybridity and creolization. But I think very recently her interest developed in the area of spirit possession and trance in Brazil and some other parts of Latin America. And we are quite delighted to have you here, and we look forward to your reflection.
Some of you probably know I am a trained anthropologist, and so I come to the field of religion from cultural anthropology. trained in Germany, and so with a specific focus on culture and cultural context. And so my comments come really from this anthropological approach to religion and how we look at text. As an anthropologist, I'm interested, first of all, in empirical data. I not only like to do field work, but I also like to read about field work. I like to ground things in the field and to hear from experience and participant observations and from interviews. This is my passion, why I'm interested in this field. However, just data, which I, one of my first professors told me, well, it's just looking at a telephone dictionary. It's not academical. It's not scholarly. It's just data. We have to do something with the data. We have to analyze the data, and therefore we need theoretical tools. So looking at vice versa, only to read only a theoretical book, I find personally quite boring. It might make a good contribution to scholarship, but I miss the ethnographic data. But on the other side, only ethnographic data is what I can do at the weekend, leisure time. It's just a novel and not an academic book. And so both parts have to come together. And with this book, I think it's really unique that every chapter, every author of these 15 chapters look at specific case studies and link it with a theoretical debate. Now, this is one of the things really I like with the book, the combination of theory, of ideas about concepts, but also grounding it with case studies. Case studies from Asia, case studies from quite a lot from Europe, but also case studies from America, and so from quite a global perspective. And this is one of the things which I really like with the book we are launching today, because it combines both aspects, theory and empirical data. The topic New Age shows quite a lot of similarities with the topic of popular culture and anthropology. So with popular culture, I mean culture of the mass, of what people do, looking at soap operas, or being interested in what the celebrities are doing. Radio 4 show today started with a note that the item which was clicked most on the BBC website was quite prominent divorce and not the Malaysian plane or Ukraine. No, people were interested in celebrities, and this is what people do. However, in anthropology, this popular culture was ignored for a long time. Anthropologists looked as indigenous tribes, preferably way beyond every normal reach, and so in the distant, in the Amazon, on islands, not at home. And even in the Brazilian case, as aforementioned, my current research field is Brazil, the focus of anthropologists always, but for a long time, on indigenous groups in the Amazon. Then came an interest in Afro-Brazilian cultures. And so anthropologists realized this is also exotic enough. But they totally ignored what the normal Brazilians are doing, the mass, the povo brasileiro, the Brazilian people, but also that the indigenous, when they move to Sao Paulo, they are also addicted to soap operas, Afro-Brazilian is. They are also addicted to a different type of music. Or to celebrities. And so anthropologists for a long time ignored what people are really doing, what they are interested in. They wanted to pack culture in boxes, indigenous culture, Afro-Brazilian culture, and they ignored all the rest. And when we then moved to religion, they also ignored spiritism. So we had anthropologists of religion working on Candomblé and Umbanda and Mancumba and all the other Afro-Brazilian religions. But until recently, no anthropologists worked on spiritism. that millions of Brazilians practice spiritism. But this was too wide, not exotic enough. So people ignored it. And I think the same happened with New Age. The focus in study of religion was for a long time on the big religions. What I don't dare in the presence of Jim to call world religions. So this was the focus on study of religion, the mainstream religions. Some anthropologists, again, Jim is here, started looking at indigenous religion. But for a long time, other religions were ignored, other traditions, what really people do. If you're on, when you look at newspapers, and at the time I had quite a lot of time in Cardiff at the airport, and so I bought a newspaper. And of course, the other passengers also were looking into something to do. And newspapers, horoscope, of course, everyone looked. But in academical circles, it was ignored. That there is something else apart from the big religions, the religions we can confine, or what scholars try to confine in certain categories. And so people, scholars overlooked what people in our society, or also abroad, and so not only at home but also abroad, practice on a daily basis, spirituality and New Age. And reading the introduction to the book, I confirmed also the realization that a reason for this was that the early scholars focused on belief, coming from a Christian perspective. The focus was on belief and not on practice, what people do. Already Evans Pritchard asked everyone to look at religion as what people do, not only what people believe in. Nonetheless, the aim of for a long time instead of religion was on belief system instead of practice. The aim was the creation of need systems. A former colleague of mine in anthropology called it, in a Spanish article, Antropología de Bronce, which is the anthropology of bronzes, the statues, what you can see in museum, the British Museum, or here in the galleries. And so the need of anthropologists to create coherent images in order to domesticate cultures, as my colleague wrote, and to demonstrate these cultures in a neat manner in glass boxes in a museum. And New Age does not fit in any glass box. It's not one coherent system, but a bricolage of ideas and practices. It is wild, savage, the ultimate other. Even the label New Age is difficult to define, as we can read in this book and others. But as the editors write in the introduction, it is impure and reactive and potential mixed with everything else, just like magnesium, which I really liked, this metaphor, magnesium. And so it is different. This is why it does not fit into categories. What I think makes it so attractive to look at, so fascinating to look at. But it also opens up the approach to look at religious practices in a different manner, and also to include not only this aspect of what Marianne said, official and vernacular religion, but religion everywhere. So the book... coming now finally to the book, not only to my anthropological background. as probably you all heard at the beginning, contained 15 chapters, each with a case study range from a range of countries, from Europe, United States, and East Asia. I just want to highlight here three to give you an idea of the range of topics. You have heard already some other aspects, and so you will know that this these three chapters are just some highlights. There are more highlights in the book. Stephen discusses in his chapter, and so not in the introduction, but in his proper chapter, the Durkheimian perspective of looking at religion, and so in particular the elementary form of religion, of religious life, which we all know, we teach and you learn, and so it is a classic book. But Steve brings in a new way to apply this on new areas, which I think will become really a core text. And I hope that Steve will elaborate it further in the next publication, perhaps even in a book in the future. So he challenges, in particular, the strategic essentialism and argues that a model of religion which is based on the elementary forms rather than on rationalized religion entities challenges the authority of the world religion taxonomy. And I think this is really something we have to embrace in the study of religion and develop further. However, when I got the book from the publisher, and looked at it, I immediately went into Ingvald's chapter before reading Stephen, I have to admit. And immediately the next day emailed one of my PhD students and said, this is a book, look into it, in particular in Ingvald's chapter, because he writes on location of religion. And as Marian says, Ingvald proposes to add a fourth category to Jonathan Z. Smith's model of religion. And this category of religion everywhere is, I think, a really good way to look at the range of religious activities, the range of elements, which cannot fit into categories, which is often more secular than religion in the traditional categories, but it has something to do with religion. So I think this category of religion everywhere is an important contribution to this whole debate on location of religion. And so much further than just on one aspect of religion, but looks at religion in a wider way, and shows therefore how society communicates about religion. The third, this is probably more connected to my interest in spirit possession. I, of course, was also fascinated by Anne Tavis and Michael Kinsella's paper, because I knew other work from Anne about spirit possession in France, and so I was also quite interested in their approach. However, in their chapter, it's not so much about spirituality or spiritualism. They discuss, what I was interested, but they discuss the term unorganized religion. And so they argued that unorganized religions, such as spiritualism in the United States, have a certain degree also of organizational structures. Therefore, this whole definition in unorganized and organized doesn't fit really when you look at what religions are doing. It reminded me when I was writing my PhD thesis, it was on Santeria and Spiritism, Puerto Rican Spiritism. I had similar problems. I thought it's quite good to explain what Spiritism is and that I look at Spiritism as a religion. So I used the term undogmatic religion. And so I made a distinction between dogmatic religions, Christianity, in Puerto Rico, where I did my fieldwork, the majority religion, and unorganized, undogmatic religions, Santeria and Puerto Rican Spiritism. However, when I then gave my first paper at a conference, immediately a colleague then challenged me, because I mentioned Puerto Rican Spiritist Federations. This also is organized, and therefore they have publications, and Kardec literature is quite dogmatic. And they used Kardec's ideas as dogma. So it didn't fit, though still I use it in my PhD. But it is difficult to create new labels because when we look at the field, they didn't fit. We can think of wonderful ideas, but the reality is often quite in our way to make success with new categories. And the same problem is visible in Anne Tavis and Michael Kinsella's paper. On the one side, even Christianity has a lot of undogmatic, unorganized, or vernacular elements. But on the other side, they're trying to look at the unorganized elements in spirituality. And so this chapter by Tavis and Kinsella shows once again the problem finding the exact terminology when working with lived, vernacular, practice religions. So on the whole, the book shows indeed that New Age is, as the editor writes in their conclusion, good to think. Perhaps the most stimulating food for thought in the modern field, though I must admit, from personal perspective, I also would include Afro-American religions, not only New Age, but also African-American religion, also good for thought. So the book shows that religion is a mobile social phenomena. It's not owned by anyone, not by institution or a handful of charismatic leaders, and not by scholars. It is everywhere, within all sections of society. So the book therefore shows that the old essentialist division in religious and secular is not suitable for modern society. So we have to rethink religion. So I would even say that the book should have the subtitle as the head, as the top title, because it is good to think about religion. It's not only a book about New Age. It is a book about rethinking religion. Thank you very much for all your contributions.
I would like to call on the third respondent, David Robertson, who is our own David here. And I would like to indicate that David is in the beginning of the end of a liminal phase of his PhD. And he is quite courageous, just a few hours to his PhD defense, to be responding to a book. So I congratulate you for that. let me say that I won't say more about that, because the spirit of spiritual gurus who are going to conduct the ritual is lingering. And I don't want to be possessed, so I won't say anything about that. Yeah, but just to say that David is one of the co-founder of the Religious Studies Project, which has been a very fascinating project that we all have benefited from. And so I would like to ask him to come forward and give his reflections.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Thanks, Afi. Thanks for everybody for coming. Thanks to Stephen Ingville for inviting me. Okay, as it's sort of been suggested already, New Age is a particularly interesting case study in the dynamics and problems of category formation in the study of religions. The big problem is that the data doesn't fit comfortably in our typologies. In fact, New Age spiritualities, or whatever we choose to call this particular group of practices and discourses in this particular socio-historical context, are doubly marginal. On the one hand, they don't fit the category of world religions, lacking the formal structure, institutionalized authority, propositional beliefs, and canonical texts, which we are told signifies these more venerable faiths. However, neither is New Age a comfortable fit with the catch-all extra categories which the world religions paradigm has incorporated into itself to deal with these exceptions. It lacks both the charismatic founder, the dogmatism, and the exclusivism of most new religious movements, as well as the historical and geographical heritage of indigenous religions. In short, it's neither church nor cult nor sect, which, as Anne Taves and Michael Kinsella write in this book, has tended to hide this data from sociological view. I think this volume goes a long way to rectifying this, as does Marion's recent work. But data which troubles the margins of classificatory schema, such as the popularity and social pervasiveness of New Age beliefs and practices, are particularly enlightening, I think, not only because they reveal the weaknesses of these schema, but because they remind us that these classificatory systems are based on implicit assumptions, which in turn can illuminate the unspoken interests behind them. In this case, the assumption that religion combines some sort of institutionalized power structure with a formalized set of beliefs concerning postulated non-human beings clearly favors certain forms of religion over others. Moreover, those forms are those which were hegemonic in the societies from which the academic study of religion itself emerged. It is in this way that a solidly empirical study of New Age practices and beliefs may fulfill the bold claim of the subtitle of this book and force us to rethink religion. The aim of the book, then, is, as the author suggests, and which the other commentators have mentioned, is that New Age is useful to think with in terms of this meta-category religion. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. The first part of the title is New Age Spiritualities. Given that this combines two emic terms, at least in their origin, which have moreover proven resilient to substantive definition, this may seem an odd choice at first for a volume which has such a firm theoretical purview. This is, of course, further complicated by the fact that New Age in particular, and it may yet happen with spirituality, that it has had a post-emic life as an etic taxon with multiple and often contradictory contradictions, as Steve himself outlined for us in his introduction and is in the introduction of the book. There, the editors also make it clear that they have not corralled the contributors into a particular terminology, but allowed them to use terms like New Age, capital letters and quotes, or New Age, no quotes and capital letters, New Age spirituality, New Age religiosity, simply spirituality and other terms, as they themselves see fit. This is in keeping with the fact that the editors are not interested in defending or any particular definition or constructing an alternative one. And I think this particular agenda, or lack of an agenda more correctly, is underlined by the volume's absence of contributions from many of those early theorists, Steve himself and Paul Hillis being the exceptions. And this means that the theoretical impetus of the volume is kept in much tighter focus than in other competing volumes such as the aforementioned Brill Handbook of New Age. That being said, many of the chapters in New Age Spiritualities seek to challenge the popular and often academic conceptions of New Age as a spiritual supermarket without any social or historical context. The chapters problematise many of the assumptions of the category which we've inherited from these earlier scholars. Gilhu's contribution suggests that there's nothing inherently novel about New Age in comparison to official forms of religion, as has been described already, making the fruitful and insightful comparison with religion in the Greco-Roman world. Likewise, Rothstein makes a similar argument in reference to identification with animals in ethnography of indigenous religions, which we've discussed a fruitful comparison with indigenous religions already. And Taves and Kinsella argue that New Age is less amorphous and unorganized than it is often portrayed, and in fact shows forms of organization which have a distinct, if often ignored, heritage. Both the chapters by Mikkelsen and that by Alpers and Hootman argue that New Age is less unambiguously individualistic and privatized than is typically described. And I think most importantly, the case studies, which the other respondents have mentioned happily, upset the perception that New Age is necessarily kind of anti-Christian or at least anti-official official religion. And this may be something that is atypical of New Age in the UK context. It's certainly very different in... The chapter on Poland I thought was particularly enlightening, but also the chapters on Japan and Taiwan, Norway and the US. And in the US case, it reminded me of the role of Edgar Cayce, for instance, in the early historiography of New Age and in his role in Christianizing many of these discourses and practices into a context that was then applicable to US discourse. And this, that point is particularly important, I think. Marian kind of intimated this to a degree, but the construction of New Age and Christianity as distinctive categories is contingent on an implicit prioritizing of elite narratives and of the more reasoned theological position of the official functionaries of these religious traditions. A refocusing of the discussion to prioritize or at least equally represent popular narratives and constructions may yet reveal that what is terminologically marginalized as folk, vernacular, or popular religion offers, in fact, a more accurate understanding of the function of human relationships with these postulated supernatural agencies, and furthermore, may help remove the discussion from the hands of those with something to gain from the status quo. However, the problem of data remains. The data that this book draws from has, on some level, been selected. Without a formal definition being presented by the editors, we must ask if the data has been chosen according to some preconceived or intuitive idea of what New Age is. In other words, the book to some degree reifies New Age, even as it seeks to challenge the category. In his chapter, Sutcliffe notes that to bring the study of New Age to fresh maturity will likely be at the expense of continuing an academic sub-discipline of New Age studies, since it implies that there is nothing inherently special or peculiar, after all, about New Age data. Yet, in this book, he and Gilhus have selected what is New Age data and presented it as in some way special, if only from the point of view of scholarly categorization. To extend this, if Reiki and discourses on healing energy are viewed within a Christian context in Poland, should we be discussing them as New Age rather than Christian discourses? Or neither? And does it belong in the same category as the more specifically anti-Christian UK New Age discourses? It seems somewhat circular to argue that the presence of New Age practices in a Christian context problematizes the category when it is we as scholars who have labelled these practices as New Age in the first place. So return again to the title. Books need titles, and for this book to get into the hands of those it needs to, it really needed to have the term New Age on the front cover. Like New Age itself and scholarship, publishing is embedded in a free market economic system. Sometimes pragmatics trump theoretical ideas, as Steve intimated in his introduction. We scholars, however we may dislike categories like New Age, also find ourselves embedded in a system in which religions and the exceptions to that category are embedded in a particular discourse. This is to say that the critique I've presented here is not meant as a criticism of the editor's work, but to bring to light issues which underline the theoretical complexity of a volume such as this, and a doubly marginal field such as New Age studies. Sutcliffe and Gilhus have, I think, offered the most theoretically reflexive volume on New Age studies to date, but in order to do so, may have had to capitulate somewhat to practical concerns. New Age Spiritualities is, I think, a timely contribution to an emerging consensus or trend in the field that a theoretical approach to religion, and the world religions paradigm in particular, which constructs religion as a sui generis, eternal, ineffable, and which ranks religions according to their similarity to Christianity, or at least elite forms thereof, is inaccurate, elitist, possibly colonial, and certainly theological. However, whilst this volume may help us to rethink religion, I wonder if at the same time it may, to some degree, reinforce and contribute to the continuation of that problematic construct, New Age. Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. And we've heard from the three reviewers. And I would like to propose that this is the time for both editors to respond to some of the issues raised, or else they will forever keep quiet. So may I invite Steve and Ingvild, perhaps you could take chairs up here.
Well, where do we start? I mean, it's a strange experience to have your work, you know, talked about in this way. It's not happened to me before in this kind of slightly more formal setting. And It's a lot of effort went into putting the book together, so it's gratifying to feel that people read it and reflect on it and give you some detailed and thoughtful response. I could say something to start with, shall I?
Do that,
yeah?
Please.
Okay. On the point of view of Marian's parallel with the Vernacular Religion Project, I think it was very well taken, actually. yes, I mean, I think there's similar things going on here. And I think both categories, vernacular religion and this rather more problematic category, New Age spirituality or New Age whatever it is, New Age religiosity, as David points out, more problematic than vernacular, are doing similar things, often actually with the same material. So it's not even they're parallel strains or parallel approaches. They're actually often working with exactly the same material. And in some ways, that's a disciplinary history to that, where the ethnologists and the folklore folk have been coming to it, as you showed so well, Marian, from one set of histories, disciplinary histories, and the religious studies people, often with some of the problems that religious studies folk have to work through themselves are coming to it somewhere else. And in a funny kind of way, the RS folk tend to be those who think in terms of New Age studies, and the ethnologists are working much more vernacular religion. But I think the point of both of them really is to get to where those phenomena, beliefs or practices and representations that we might call religion get represented in everyday lives, in everyday people's lives, non-elites' lives. Not as a, polarization between the non-elites and the elites, but just to bring another level of the travel of religious representations onto the radar. So I think that's a very good parallel to make. Why don't you say something? I have something else I can say about that.
I think that what you have said, it has given a lot of food for thought and a reason to think things over again. David says something about post-emic, that some of these terms have a post-emic life as ethic terms, which is very well put. In Terry Utriainen's chapter about the angel practices in Finland, she interviewed, I think, 500, a lot of people who were into angels. And she asked them about the term New Age, and I think it was two of these people who thought themselves in relation to the term. So it is rather curious that the term that was very active for a short period has been, in a way, the term that this phenomenon has got. The problem with New Age, the more basic problem, is not New Age, I think it is the problem with the term religion. And at least in Berg, but I think many places in the world, half of the curriculum for master's studies, a little bit, not so much perhaps, but it is about the definition of religion, because religion is very different, difficult to define. And it is something about categories dividing things from other categories. And the categories that we are using, they do not really fit very well. So that is the problem. And Bettina talked about grounding things in the field. Perhaps we could do that much better than we do now, and perhaps it would be more easy to change or develop our categories if we had more hands-on on what we are doing. I also think that you said, Steve, that Marion's term about vernacular religion, and here is something happening in parallel to what we are doing in the study of religion departments. And that is quite true. And why haven't we called it vernacular religion, for instance, Steve?
Do you
have a really good answer to that?
No, I don't. I could say something about that, though, because let's just take up David's point there. So actually, I think I was looking for the original proposal that we sent to the publisher, and I can't actually find it, but I think we wanted to call it, was it New Age Beliefs and Practices and Theories of Religion?
But that's very boring.
It was
extremely boring.
Yeah, but then another point it became New Spiritualities and Theories of Religion. And then by this point, I think that the term New Age Spirituality had got into the production process, and our publishers told us, well, it's already out on the web with this, you know. If you put a pluralized version in, you know, the viruses will be running riot. There is something there. I think one of the reasons, actually, is quite pragmatic, and the pragmatics are important, and David alluded to this specifically, that publishers want products that are recognizable, and New Age Spirituality is a brand. And in some ways, it's as simple as that. Now, in other work that I've done, I mean, I've spent a lot of time talking about the category New Age, and I've reconstructed emic histories of use and a whole different history of use of New Age as an apocalyptic or millennial emblem that far predates the post-1960s countercultural and post-countercultural uses of New Age. So I've done that somewhere else. But on this one, there's also a kind of joining of the pragmatic and the theoretical, because actually I think at some point it's more important that the book gets out there and smuggles out its ideas and its messages, or not smuggles them out, distributes them, and never mind the category debate for now. You know, in a sense, I suppose that's been done and can be picked up elsewhere. Because I think actually that the category debate actually is only really significant if there's some theoretical yield from it, if there is some juice from it. Now, you started to talk about your discursive, you know, elements and who benefits, you know, cui bono, you know, who benefits from whatever categories we use. And that is an important element of the politics of the study of religion and the politics of the way that religion is represented in the wider societies that lurks at the back of a lot of these problems, I think, in definitional debate. And, you know, on another time, another occasion, we could develop that conversation more. But I suppose pragmatically, it felt at this stage that, you know, it's a balance. We can get more juice out of getting these ideas out under this label than by spending too much time with the definitional debate at this point, certainly on New Age spirituality. Well, I think that's it, really, isn't it?